Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 54. And 54 felt like the number of points the Seahawks put up on the Steelers' defense yesterday. Of course, in Seattle, CenturyLink Field, the Steelers dropped to 6-5, 39-30 losers to the Seattle Seahawks in a game dominated by defense that wasn't played very well by either team, and certainly Mike Tomlin's coaching decisions. Dave, let's start with the injury situation. The Steelers had two of significance in the concussion protocol. Ben Roethlisberger, who went out of the game at the very end after taking a hit on the Steelers' next-to-last drive, and there'll be plenty of questions about why he was allowed to stay in the game, particularly after the Case Keenum situation. And then Ryan Shazier, whose concussion looked much more significant. And then Heath Miller left the game with rib injuries, came back, but then had to leave again. So that probably is somewhat significant as well.
Yeah, and then to wrap things up, I think we had Sean Spence late in the game suffer some sort of a hamstring injury as well, too. So
which
we'll have to watch
which
that.
Which is a recurring thing we would imagine, having been on the injury list with that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, most definitely. So we'll definitely have to watch that. Roethlisberger, depending on you know some of the reports you want to go by this morning, I think ESPN said that a lot of his symptoms cleared up later in the evening. Yeah, I think always the next day or two are always the ones to really focus on in something like that. Of course, he'll have to be cleared by a quote unquote independent neurologist before he's allowed to practice, whatever that means. I would expect Mike Tomlin to talk about it Tuesday. And to be quite honest with you, you're barring some sort of setback. And being as how Roethlisberger, do you remember the last time he missed a game due to a concussion?
I do not.
After he missed a game against the Ravens following him getting knocked out late in that game against the Kansas City Chiefs back in 2009. Remember that?
I remember the game where he got the ribs and he almost died, right?
In the No, I'm talking a couple years before that.
Yeah, that doesn't jump out to me.
Yeah, that was the last time he's missed a game because of a concussion. So, in short, you know, every concussion is different, obviously. But that was quite a wallop that Michael Bennett put on him, helmet to helmet. I think Michael Bennett can expect a FedEx envelope from the league on Tuesday or Wednesday here. But long story short, I would expect Roethlisberger to be able to play Sunday night against the Indianapolis Colts. As far as Shazier goes, we'll see. I mean, his did look a lot. He looked like he may have thought he was Batman at one point there when being helped off the field. And Heath Miller, man, really took a couple of shots, I thought, in that game. He's taken worse, I thought, but got him right in the rib area in one of those. And yeah, right now you'd have to think he's questionable right now for this Sunday night game against the Colts, and we'll have to see what happens with Spence.
Yeah, if we were guessing, I would say all three guys out except for Ben. That would be if I were just guessing from here. I'm with you. Shazier, when he walked off, didn't look good. Heath, you know, did he crack a rib? Did he fracture a rib? We'll see how that goes. He's tough as nails. We know that he'd like to be in there, but Jesse James continues to perform reasonably well when called upon, and then Spence with the hamstring. It's just with the recurrence of a hamstring, that's always an issue when you have it, and he had 2 weeks off last time. He won't have that this time to get to Sunday. So as the Steelers get ready for the Indianapolis game. Dave, the pass defense is the obvious problem here, and I went into the game talking on the pregame show yesterday saying, look, I feel like if the Steelers control the Seahawks run game, they will win this game. And I said the teams that have beaten the Seahawks have all put up 27 points. I think the Steelers can do that against this defense. So I feel like if they contain Russell Wilson in the run game, and are able to stop Thomas Rawls. I don't think Wilson will be able to beat him in the passing game. But you know what? I felt like the Steelers did everything that could be asked in the run game, and they got absolutely torched. And you and I sent tweets out almost at exactly the same time talking about how Wilson was picking apart the Steelers' secondary. And after going three and out the two opening drives of the second half, where the Steelers had gotten a 21-14 lead, and if you're a Steeler fan, you had to feel really good about the situation they were in. They had the ball up 21-14 in the third quarter. And boy, from there, it was just a disaster.
Yeah, and am I surprised at the pass defense? Absolutely not. You know, I hate to keep going back to that adjusted net yards per attempt stat of mine, but all season that stat has told us that the Steelers' pass defense and pressure, sacks, not just pressure, but sacks, pass defense, everything that goes along with that is not acceptable. I mean, it just isn't. You know, you look at the other teams that were ahead of them in those rate rankings and quite a few behind them. The Steelers had the highest defensive, what they call the ANA stat. So I'm not surprised one bit. I've also said several times that stat just doesn't magically get better at week 12 and on. It just doesn't, unless you're really, really playing against some, you know, second or third string, you know, quarterbacks. Look, I mean, Russell Wilson, I bet half the Steeler fans couldn't even name, most of their wide receivers.
Oh,
on
yeah,
that
no,
team.
I said that if you don't play fantasy, you might have, you probably know Jimmy Graham and you might know Doug Baldwin, but you're not picking up anybody after that. And, Dave, I'm with you. And what we've been talking about here on this show is very simple, is the Steelers have been giving up a ton of passing yards. In the games they lost, they gave up Carson Palmer, chewed him up for 400-some. But the difference was they've been opportunistic in getting turnovers. And that's the not giving up points and giving up a ton of yards, those things don't stay apart for in perpetuity. If one of two things is going to happen, you're either going to start giving up points or you're going to start giving up a lot less yards to correspond with the number of points that you would expect to get for those number of yards. And we've seen it now. David Carr takes them apart defensively, and they give up five touchdowns. Look, Johnny Manziel and the Browns didn't put up a lot of points, but they moved the ball effectively through the air against the Steelers. And, we saw what Russell Wilson did yesterday, a quarterback rating of 147.9, a QBR of 90.3, as efficient as you could be, with 345 yards passing on only 21 completions, five touchdowns, zero interceptions. Everybody knows the stats. This is a ridiculously bad pass defense that we thought it was going to be, probably as bad as we thought it was going to be at the start of the season. And through schemes and turnovers, they were able to survive for a period of time. But what we're seeing now is the true colors being exposed.
Yeah, it was indeed masked by turnovers on their own end of the field and some sacks in there. That's how it was masked. You throw in there. Look, let's go back several games. Early on in the season, games against the San Francisco 49ers, where the 49ers missed some big plays in that game, flat out drops. The secondary just breakdowns, communication problems in the secondary. Were the Steelers going to probably win that game anyway? Yeah, probably. Let's go back to that 12-6 game against the St. Louis Rams. How many plays did St. Louis leave on the field in that game, in the passing game? The drop to, who was it, Kendricks down the down that left side that really could have been a game-changing play in that game. They played reasonably well, I thought, against the Chargers. I'm not making excuses here, but, I mean, let's look at the game against the Arizona Cardinals. Let's face it. Carson Palmer wasn't sharp as a tack in that game.
Bad interceptions. He missed John Brown wide open in the end zone. He threw for a lot of yards, but I came out of that game saying, boy, I'll tell you, Carson Palmer did not play well.
Okay, so, let's look. David Carr torched him. Johnny Manziel, for the most part, had a decent game. They just failed to convert when they really needed to inside the red zone. Tom Brady, go back to week one of the season, and then you know, fast forward to what we saw. You remember me writing last week and talking about first downs, David, and you know, good defense usually starts on first down, especially in the pass. Boy, 11, if I'm looking at things correctly, the Seahawks had 11 first down passing plays of first and 10 on Sunday. They averaged 9.45 yards on those 11 plays. Only four plays were incomplete passes. The shortest pass completed of the seven that were completed was 3 yards. The other six were 8, 11, 12, 13, 21, 36. I got news for you. Let's see, 5 of those plays, there was no second down that followed the first down.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so, I've written about that quite a bit. I'm blue in the face. People want to ignore that ANY-A or slash A stat. Do what you will, but boy, in my opinion, there's no better stat than that. And right now, David, we'll see what happens with this team and if they're whether or not, you know, they can make the playoffs. But if they do make the playoffs, I will be absolutely stunned if they make it to the Super Bowl. Shocked.
Well, the only thing they have going for them is everybody's getting banged up and nobody looks particularly good in the AFC right now. But, you know, you talk about playing good football at the right time of year. All of a sudden, Denver gets a good win at home and they're coming to town in a couple of weeks. The Colts have turned things around. They're coming to town this week. The Bengals continue to play good football. The Steelers have to go there next week. Those are their next three opponents. They're 6-5 right now. It is certainly not unreasonable to assume they're going to be 7-7 or could be 6-8. Look, things could go their way, but they're going to play three teams right now that are playing better football than they are coming into this game. And then, you're 6-8. That means you're going to be shaking hands on that Sunday night game with the Ravens in a game that nobody's going to care about. And then you finish things out against the Browns in a game that people care even less about when you're talking about big picture. So, yeah, it is going to be a fascinating next 3 weeks to see if the Steelers can keep themselves in the race. Now, this game didn't, you know, in the big picture of things, do or die, scale of 1 to 10 must win. It wasn't a must win. But the safety net's now gone, and their AFC record is so poor that these three games coming up become basically must-win games kind of week after week after week. If the Steelers win 4 of their last 5, I think you and I probably would bet that they probably get in, even with the tiebreaker situation working probably against them. I think if they get to 9-7, they'll probably be there, right? What are they, 6-5? So 4 of their last 5 would be 10-6. The 10-6 will get them there for sure, right?
Yeah, if they go 10-6, they're going to get in.
Yeah, so if they got to win 4 out of the last 5, they're a lock. If they go 3-2, they got a shot.
Barely, maybe. I mean, they're going to need – we'll be sitting there watching the scoreboard on that last week for sure, if something like that. Let's talk about why that pass defense is bad.
Okay, that's good because it's – I think it's pretty straightforward. Go ahead. I'll let you kick it off.
Well, I think more than anything, we live in a day and age now with the tape and with the study and with the quality of quarterbacks out there and the preparation that all goes into this thing. To just run a simple cover three type defense and not involve any what we like to call pattern reading in that. In other words, you're just playing a straight zone
shell.
Your straight shell with your curl flats. You know, everybody's running to a landmark,
right,
so to speak. You you pretty much leave your center fielder free safety to guess and read a quarterback's eyes and hope he guesses right in that. If not, you're going to get torched down the seams, and especially in the 30 yard line on in, where really you're kind of most vulnerable, I believe.
Because the ball right comes out fast, the guy quarterback's making a quick read, you don't have time to react to cover 7 yards of ground.
Right, you know, in so many words, Russell Wilson knew exactly where the defenders were going to be on those plays. All he needs to do is get the time, look the safety off, make sure someone like a guy like Will Allen doesn't
jump anything or do anything unexpected.
Right, get a good drop on it, you know, underneath there to prevent kind of a laser coming out of there. And it was really just a pitch and catch. And if you are going to play, in short, this is what the Steelers need to do. We're going to have a good talk about Antoine Blake and the tackling here in a little bit. But I mean, throw the players, the quality of the players out here, outside of the fact that you need, in my opinion, more kind of cerebral cornerbacks who can play both you know, your zone, your typical cover three shell, and then you can mix in a lot more pattern reading, because then and only then are you going to be able to surprise opposing quote unquote good quarterbacks at that point. And you know, rest assured, I mean, this isn't a defense of 2000 and you know, 2004, 2005 season there, where, you know, when they beat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, where you know, you got the ferocious pass rush that really was getting after the quarterback. You had such a good run defense, and you had teams that ran a lot on first down, which automatically put them behind the chains in second and then third and long situations. You don't have that anymore. In the NFL, you have teams that are more than willing to pass on first down and then use the run to support things later on in the game. And that's the biggest change, I think, in the last 10 years that the Steelers defense hasn't been able to keep up with. So in my opinion, you know, regardless of the quality of player, I think that type of player that plays in the secondary not only has to be able to tackle, be reliable, be physical because of all the zone that they play, the defense is also going to have – they're absolutely going to have to start mixing in some more pattern reading type stuff. You're just going to have to be less vanilla in the back end of your secondary, and especially if you're not able to get opposing offenses in predictable behind the chain situations such as second and eight and third and seven type situations.
I agree with everything you said, and to get into some more of the specifics, we've talked about how Will Gay has become Nnamdi Asamoah, where, you know, back in the day where they never threw to his side, and we saw more of it yesterday where they didn't throw at Will Gay at all. I mean, again, it was just keep throwing at Antoine Blake and Will Allen. And, you know, occasionally mix in Jimmy Graham, because we can do this all day long. We can go up the seam. We can run wheel routes. We can run curl flats. We can just do things that where a guy in the secondary has to make a read, and we flood the zone, and we know that the safety in the corner won't play it right, and it'll be an easy pass. And I just – it's crazy how many times the Steelers just didn't play the play right. And we can go back to Amari Cooper and the catching the ball in the Steeler game in Pittsburgh and Heinz Field, where there wasn't a defender within 15 yards of him on a 20-yard touchdown pass, where both Timmons and Shazier are in the flat. Maybe Blake took the inside guy when he wasn't supposed to. Who knows exactly how the play design was set up? But there's nobody near the guy. And you look at there were five touchdown passes yesterday. And excluding the last one where Baldwin kind of, you know, runs 50 yards for free. I mean, there are guys, you know, not around. The guy's not around, the guy catching the football in these situations. And it, David, goes back to what you said about the scheme being bad. First of all, that's a big problem because they can't play man. They obviously can't do it. They're not physically capable. They're not talented enough to play man, even against this receiver core. And then they try to play zone, and you have a cerebral quarterback. And, you know, Russell Wilson made me look dumb because I said I don't think he's a great quarterback. I said I think he's really cerebral. Well, I'll still stick by the fact that being a cerebral quarterback and everything you said about the scheme, he knows what to do and where the weaknesses are, and he exploited them to the fullest. And, you know, look, the obvious question now for everybody listening to the podcast, for us, for, you know, people have been talking about this all year. The Steelers went and traded for Brandon Boykin for a reason, and he has sat on the bench, and we've seen Robert Golden come in when Will Allen was injured, and he's now back on the bench. And Mike Mitchell's having a better season, and Will Gay is fine at the other corner. But the question is, Did those two guys specifically play poorly enough now where you actually have to bench them and say, this just, you know, this is just ridiculously bad?
Well, let's start with this. You'll see in a post later today by John Ledyard on Steelers Depot just how incredibly poor several tackle attempts were by Antoine Blake. Because let's not even get into the coverage. Let's just get into the sheer fact of being able to tackle a guy after he busts through the line on a run or after he catches a football. Blake at this point can't even do that. Wait till you see some of these efforts that he had in the game Sunday against the Seahawks, and let's start there. I don't see – I mean, what have we been told about Steelers cornerbacks over the years and why the reasons that –
Yeah,
you know,
sure,
great
tackling after the catch.
Right. You know, they're not so much there for their man-to-man coverage skills or their press skills. Obviously, you're not going to get those type guys in the fourth or fifth round. I mean, you're going to originally, you know, maybe slip up and get a diamond in the rough like Josh Norman, you know, maybe sometime like that. But for the most part, if you're going to get a guy in the fourth or fifth round, he sure better be physical and he sure better be able to tackle because he's going to ask to play downhill normally a lot in the Steelers' defense. Blake right now can't even do that. When you look at how bad, cumulative, if you go back in your head and you look, and we already talked about several of these games this season, David, and Blake being kind of at the center, not all the time, but you know, a good quarter of the time, if not quarter to half of the time, at fault on some things, whether it be a missed tackle, whether it be, you know, one thing or another with him. I think it is time to, I mean, really, how much worse can it get? And the same really goes for Will Allen, in my opinion, too. You can't tell me that Robert Golden didn't show you enough during those games that he started during Will Allen was out, that you can't at least put him in now at this point to get some snaps from him just to see what you have, because you know you really, in my opinion, you can't do any worse.
Yep. Oh, right. Here. You know, cosign. I don't know what to say about Antoine Blake. I mean, look, I've not been a Robert Golden, a Will Allen fan for a period of time. I think he's done it. I think it's been surprising to me how over the last 2 years how capable he's been most of the time, but getting trucked in the run game, taking bad angles in the run game, not helping out in the pass game. You know, he's a guy who I actually think is in there more as run support now than it is as being a capable pass defender. Yeah, he's supposed to know where to go, but obviously it doesn't matter because he can't get there. And
ability versus cerebral will only get you so far in a game of football,
well,
right?
Well, when you're 33, too. I mean, you know, that's great when you're 28, but when you're 33 – cerebral and being two steps slow instead of a half step slow, cerebral will make up for the half step. It ain't making up for the two steps.
Right. And that, you know, that's the problem here. So, look, I mean, what do you do at this point based on what you got? You know,
what do you think of Cockrell? Was he, I mean, look, the catch by Graham, Cockrell couldn't have played it better. The guy's 8 inches taller than he is. You know, he made a good play on the ball. He made a second play on the ball. Graham made a great play, right?
Oh yeah, Graham made an absolutely tremendous catch on that. Cockrell, I mean, he missed some tackles in the game, right?
Yep, he missed some tackles.
I mean, at least two.
He got beat on that double move for the touchdown. But I mean, he's going to stay on the field, right?
Oh yeah, you're absolutely going to have to keep. Well, here's what you have to do. You have to absolutely pull Blake out off the field. Completely. Look, you play so much nickel now anyways. You have Cockrell on one side. You're going to have to put Gay on the other side, and you're going to have to put Boykin in the slot. And you know, I think that they're kind of worried about Boykin's tackling ability and physicality as well, too. But, you know, we've seen him make some special team stops. You know, really not a lot of tape, I don't think, going back, you know, in my head when I went back and researched him during his time with the Eagles. It was more of kind of man type slot underneath where he really, really played well. But, you know, I think that's what you need to do at this point, just to see what you get there. Here's the bad thing about it. If you throw Boykin on the field, regardless of what happens, he's probably going to be, I mean, he's gone at the end of the year anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, there's, there's, I can't even, He could have 10 interceptions, and Steelers could go in the Super Bowl and be the Super Bowl MVP, and I can't imagine him coming back.
You know, I guess you could cut Cortez Allen right out of the chute and free up some money here and there and pay Boykin.
Yeah, we're wasting time talking about that. I mean, you know, it's
not happening. So, but I mean, here's the chore, though. You have to put the best players out there that give you the ability to win a single football game. And right now, it can't be worse to put Boykin out there in the slot and move Gay out to the outside. It just can't be. I mean, are you gonna do something like put Dorian Grant out there? No, I don't think so. But I think Blake needs to go to the sideline for a little bit and more than anything, get himself healthy to start with, because if you can't tackle, you're not worth a dang right now. And that's where it starts. And you know, the rest of the coverage stuff, you know, we can talk about it.
So we get this part cleared up, because we've talked about it a couple times. Blake's had the hand injury. How much is that impacting his tackling, or do you think it's a small factor or a big factor?
I think, man, you'll see in these clips, David, it looks like something else going on too.
Yeah,
I
mean, so my point is, it's not just the hand.
I don't think so.
I don't think
so. Of
course,
I'm not a doctor, but I mean, it's like it's a shoulder, like a hand and a thumb, and who knows? I mean, he's just kind of throwing his body at him, you know. But until he can make a tackle and wrap up, or you know, the team is just better just giving Boykin a shot right now, because when you talk about that NEA number that I keep liking to reference, the Steelers came into the game, David, with I'll get the number for you here, 6.46 on the defensive side of football with that stat, which is already.
So just because people pick up the podcast now and then, just define it so people can easily understand the number again.
Okay, yeah, it's called an adjusted net yards per attempt stat. Okay, the offense gets one, the defense get one. It's adjusted net yards. Those adjusted net yards are adjusted off of pass attempts, off of passing yards, off of touchdowns, off of interceptions, off of sacks, and sack yardage loss. That's how that stat's derived. Go to Pro Football Reference and use their glossary, and you will easily find ANY /A, adjusted net yards per attempt.
Okay, so just so we understand, a really good number, a medium number, and a bad number.
A really good number is somewhere like 3.5 to really anything under 5.
Okay.
Anything under 5.0.
This is from the defensive side of the ball.
This is from the defensive side of the ball. The lower the number, the better. You know, if you get into the 5.5 to 5.7, you're probably average right around in there. You get into the 6, the 7s, and the 8s, you have some problems. Well, the Steelers entered this week with a 6.46 defensive number. If you just pull out and look at the stat.
What number in the league?
It's about what? I don't have it in front of me, but it was like 20th, I think, 19th or 20th.
Okay.
So you're below average. Well, if you come up with a number just off of what we saw Sunday, that was 13.63. twice what their number for the season was in that area. Absolutely horrible. Which in turn is going to make their yearly number probably jump up. I don't have the figures
half
yet.
Half a point or a point maybe. Half a point.
Yeah.
Probably.
Maybe even a full point. I mean, 13, they gave up 5 passing touchdowns in the game, and they didn't get any sacks. I mean, they had 2 sacks. They didn't get any interceptions. You know, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. He had quite a few pass attempts in the game, only 2 sacks, and threw for, 300-something yards. So, not good. And that, like I said, those numbers don't magically get better. You got a pretty good idea what your defense is about week 7 or week 8, you know, of the season. And I just don't see it getting better. And it certainly isn't. If you go back and look at those stats related to Super Bowl teams, it's definitely you know, there's no way they, you know, history says good luck winning a Super Bowl with a number that bad. Look, the front seven, you still would like to see those outside linebackers get more consistent pressure, you know, at times. But I think the biggest thing here, and I hate to go back to it, is first downs. You know, this team is just not good defensively on first downs. And when you let them get in front of the chains like that, and you're not in predictable situations, it's tough to play good defense, you know, in those situations. I think you're just going to continue to see good cerebral quarterbacks shred them apart. And look, you got one coming to town Sunday night, Matt Hasselbeck. What is he, 3-0 or 4-0 this year?
Yeah, he's undefeated. Yeah, 4-0. 2-0 the first time, 2-0 this time.
You know, so there's reason to be concerned there with him, even though, I mean, he's got some decent receivers over there as well, too. Just a mess on a defensive side of football, David. And really, it is exactly what our fears were at the start of the season. It was just kind of, as you put it at the top of the show, it's just kind of masked along the way here by interceptions in their own end and sacks.
Okay, so let's get to the other elephant in the room, and that's Mike Tomlin. And so it's good we started with what happened on the field, so let's go to what happened off the field. And, you know, there are a variety of things to talk about here with Mike Tomlin, and it's going to start with the trick play. It's the two-point conversions. It's the fourth down decisions. And then, obviously, it's the decision at the end of the game to kick the field goal rather than to go for the touchdown. Down five with 3.5 minutes to go and the defense getting torched. So, first of all, Dave, I don't think Mike Tomlin should be fired. I'll just go back to what I've said from as long as we've been doing this podcast. I think Mike Tomlin's a good leader. I think Mike Tomlin is probably still the right guy to have this job. Here's what I question about Mike Tomlin. I don't understand his game management decisions at time, and I don't understand his clock management most of the time. And the reason I bring this stuff up over the whole years that we've been doing this podcast is because process matters. And people who say, oh, it didn't impact the outcome of the game, it's the dumbest answer you can give. It's like saying, you know, you passed your driver's test, but you didn't know how to parallel park. So when you got out on the road, you could never parallel park. So you could never get out of your car because you didn't know how to do things when it mattered, even though you got by the test. Mike constantly is making decisions that don't seem to have a lot of rhyme or reason. And so that's why I talk about it all the time. So getting into the game, and if you've listened to me, Dave and I don't spend a lot of time questioning play calls per se. You run plays. They're in practice all week. We're not sitting there watching that. They know what they've practiced. They know what the quarterback likes. They know what the route combinations are that they see in film against the Seahawks. So when they choose to go sometimes deep on third and two, you're not going to hear us say a lot about that because they're out there doing the work. Yeah, we can say it didn't work. It's a terrible call, but that's silly. And I made a point of saying this early in the season, specifically after the 49er game, when the Steelers repeatedly went deep on third and short situations. I said, please remember these plays when they don't work later in the year because people are going to go absolutely ballistic about it. And, you know, it's working here. And people love it when it works. They hate it when it doesn't work. And it's exactly the same with trick plays, gadget plays. If they don't work, they're terrible calls. Now, we can say, look, that's not the right place in the field to do it. Maybe it's not the right time in the game. But I'll rarely look. I generally like those plays, and if the design is good, they generally work. So that's kind of the framework that I'm bringing to the conversation, Dave. So before we get into it, I'll let you comment on what I just said about that, and your own comments on Tomlin.
What? Just more on the inconsistency?
Well, just your thoughts on Mike Tomlin, just big picture before getting into the game specifically.
I don't think he should be fired either, but you would just. If you're going to live by the sword, live by the sword.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, and it doesn't seem and trick plays, look, if they work, we're cutting up gifts of them, and we're writing about how creative they were and how fantastic they were. When they don't work, we're cutting up gifts.
What an idiot right. They are and how it's a terrible.
Right, right. So whatever way the coin lands matches the narrative, right?
So let's start with the play. Look, it's a game of touchdowns. They knew that they needed to go into Seattle and score points. Now, it's fourth and two. Would you rather have Ben out there? I don't know. If it's a quarter chance, Tomlin said a quarter chance gives them an opportunity because things sometimes get sloppy. So he felt like that the quarter chance was a better opportunity. Others would argue, well, a quarter chance might also give time for other teams to pay attention. And obviously from Mark Caboli's quote, the Seahawks saw that the Steelers were sending out somebody other than their regular holder. Well, that is that's a huge red flag, right? Now you look at the play design, and again, according to Mark Caboli, Heath Miller was the first option. He was covered. Villanueva was the second option. Landry Jones is there. My problem with the play is one of two things. If Landry Jones has the option to say, look, the Seahawks immediately went into a good coverage with their defense. We didn't think the play was going to work. Just call timeout. You can do it. It was not a timeout they were coming off of. They were coming off the quarter change. So he could have called timeout. That's option number one. Take a delay a game. Right, exactly. Option number two is obviously, well, with the play design. And what I didn't like about it, Dave, is it's not like Villanueva wasn't open. And it's not. What I didn't like is Landry Jones took the snap from about, 10 yards behind center. And he rolled to the right, and then he threw back to the left. And, still I'm fine with all of that. But I don't understand why when he saw things weren't there for Heath, why he didn't sprint to the left and at least challenge the defenders on the left side to come up and stop him from running for the first down and then have a run-pass option on the play. He stood static with his feet and made, a long throw that he obviously underthrew. And, Villanueva was open at one point, and he was open probably if he throws it 10 yards further. It didn't work either way. But to me, the execution was bad on Landry Jones' part for sure. Do I hate the call? No, I'm not gonna kill the call.
Well, I mean, I think you're going too deep inside the play too. I mean, it's designed to go to Heath Miller, and then it's not like, oh yeah, if you have to go backside, you should press. You should roll and press coverage because you're not even expecting anybody to be out there probably.
Well, if he's a punter, that's fine, but he is a quarterback.
Yeah. And plus, I mean, how much longer is a guy like that going to stay open? You got to get the ball out and up over the top. Lane made a great play, and as you mentioned, Jeremy Lane said after the game that they were the coaches were yelling in from the sidelines that's not the holder, that's not the punter out there. It took too much time to develop because it was after the change of a quarter. If that's something that you can do, it's got to be bam, bam, right? If you're going to run that play, it shouldn't probably be at the end of the quarter. It should be, okay, run the fake. And then out they come, get up under it before anybody has time to really think and react on something like that, especially when you're changing personnel and it sticks out like a – if the Seahawks coaches weren't yelling, that's the backup quarterback and not the punter, there's something – the whole staff needs to be fired.
Yep.
Because that's them not doing their job. The defense adjusted and okay, at that time, once you probably see that they have enough time to adjust like they did, you just, in my opinion, why not just take the delay of game? And how close was that?
I think they were like the 22 or something, like, 24.
I mean, would they still have been in field goal range?
Yeah, it's not going to kill them. It's just, you overcall the time. Either way, it's not going to – yes, they're well within Boswell's range.
Yeah, so like I said, we love them when they work. When they don't, we sit here and spend 12 minutes on them.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about two-point conversions. So people understand some of the logic behind the way the world thinks about two-point conversions is there's a belief, and I think this is slightly I think this is incorrect, is the world has looked at two-point conversion data and said it's converted about 50% of the time. So your odds of converting are about 50%. And so, you just follow the chart because the expected is 1 point. Every time you do a two-point conversion, the expected point per play is one. 50% times 0.2 is one. There's your math. So it's roughly the same as an extra point, and maybe it's a little bit – maybe they're almost identical now with the extra points being converted less often from the further distance. The thing is with the Steelers offense, they've proven in Mike Tomlin's tenure that they're about 75% conversion rate. So that's great. And look, in the first half of a game that's 16-14 and you have an extra point situation, go up by three or not, look, there's so much of the game to be played that it doesn't matter at that point whether you're, because you have 100 more decisions that are going to impact things. So I don't have a problem with it. I just think the guy should do it every single time. Why not? They've proven that they're really good at it. And so they expected it at 75% times two gives you a point and a half versus a point on the extra point. So just do it all the time. I don't understand when he pulls it out and when he doesn't pull it out, because every time he explains it, it becomes more confusing. Just say, I use my gut. Just say that, because he has said that before, and be done with it.
You mean not living in his fears?
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that.
I'm going to use that tomorrow. Yeah, might as well. And look, that here's the thing. We're talking about a coach, and you kind of hit on this. We're talking about a coach that has already gone, heading into the game, had gone for it on fourth down, what was it, 9 times already this season, I think, right? Okay, we're talking about a coach that has no problems going for two and pretty much wrote it up on a chalkboard first day of OTAs or whatnot. You know, we're going for two with this new rule this year. They've done that quite a bit so far this season. So why, basically, or not basically, why when you're down, what were they, 6 points? What was it, 32? What was the score?
32-27.
Okay, down 5 points with 3:02 left in the game. Tomlin chose to kick a field goal instead of letting the offense take the lead on fourth down from the 3-yard line. We're not talking about the 6 or the 7-yard line. We're talking about the 3-yard line, which is only 1 yard further out than a 2-point conversion, right? So, 3:02 left in the game. You have 2 timeouts left. But here's Tomlin's excuse. We just need to get a stop. He said, I felt comfortable with our ability to do it. Obviously, we didn't, but it was a calculated risk you take during football games. It was a 5-point game at that point and just wanted to give the guys an opportunity to take the points and maybe win it. That's not a calculated risk. The calculated risk would go and
let your defense try to stop them.
Yeah, the calculated risk, in my opinion, is going for the touchdown there,
right?
Because you know what's your defense has already shown the last several drives that they can't, you know, that they can't stop Sherman. What in the world gave you any idea that you could get the three points and get the ball back? You know, in my opinion. Now you're probably thinking, well, Dave, if they went for it on fourth, what's to say that the defense, and they didn't get it, what's to say that the defense gets a stop there? Well, here's the thing. Obviously, the Seahawks, if you fail on fourth and three, fourth and goal from the three, the ball obviously goes over on downs. You're still down 5 points. There's 3 minutes left in the game. You still have 2 timeouts in your pocket. And, oh, yeah, they are pinned back deep in their own end. And their play calling is probably going to be a little more conservative at that point because they do have a 5-point lead. So, you know, I like my chances there. You're still trusting your defense either way, right?
Absolutely, it's on your defense either way.
So why not go ahead and try to steal the whole bag of marbles instead of just picking 3 of them out of the bag?
I like that. I like that one.
You know, look, I wouldn't have as much of an – and I wrote about this, and boy, it didn't get a lot of comments. I'm okay with taking the 3 there if you can give me any reason to think that after kicking the football off that you're going to get the football back. And once they kicked that 3, I thought, oh, man. You know, all
never
going to
see the ball again.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have to burn your timeouts and then, you know,
and
two first downs.
That'll be an interesting thing to watch, of course.
You know, the couple first downs and the game's over. You know, you just basically gave away the game, I'm thinking, right there at that point. Now, You know, they did get him in a third and whatever situation, but, you know, the defense didn't respond. And, you know, and here's the thing, too. I know Tomlin didn't know that Ben was probably going to be sidelined the rest of the game, but had they gotten the ball, had they gotten the stop, you know, this is all which came first, the chicken or the egg. Had the defense gotten a stop, who's going to come out? You know, you're relying on Landry Jones to come out there and get your final, you know, drive down the field for 3 points. It just was inconsistent. If you're not going to live in your fears, then don't live in your fears. And especially in a situation like that where we were in our fears that the defense had to get a stop.
Dave, I just put a tweet up on here's what the Seahawks did on their last five drives of the game, excluding the kneel down. And this is after the interception. Two plays, 37 yards, touchdown. Then the Steelers got a three and out after that kickoff return where they got the long kickoff return up the right side. So it's 3 yards, three plays, 5 yards punt, then four plays, 39 yards TD, six plays, 73 yards TD, three plays, 80 yards TD. That breaks down to a total of five drives, 18 plays, 234 yards. That's 13 yards a play and four TDs. The last five drives they touched the ball, and that's what Mike Tomlin said. We were thinking we could get a stop, was having three of those TDs having just occurred.
Now, like I said, I didn't like it. We haven't even talked about Steelers offense yet, and Marcus Wheaton, you got tip of the cap to him because, boy, Richard Sherman sure did lock down Antonio Brown.
A-plus to Richard Sherman. A game ball.
Yeah, and everybody wants to talk about that one play on the interception where Antonio Brown, you know, incidental contact. Look, put yourself in the other shoes, Steelers fans. You know, that kind of situation, you would say, well, just let them play if it's a Steelers cornerback on that play instead. Was there a little bump in there? Yeah, but if you go back and look frame by frame, which I've already done this, Antonio Brown clicked his feet together, and that's what caused him to tumble there. So. Look, I thought Richard Sherman played phenomenal. He, in the nine times that he covered Antonio Brown when Antonio was on his side or targeted, I should say, Antonio caught three balls for something like, 24 yards, and two of those balls were screens out to the left side. There really, no way you're gonna not give that up. The third catch that Antonio Brown had against Sherman was that back shoulder throw down the field. Major props to Marcus Wheaton. He really had a nice game from him. Really nothing more to say about it. He really made some what we like to call combative catches, some really tough catches in traffic. We saw him get yards after the catch on a couple of
situations. What was he doing on that touchdown?
I don't know. Get in the end zone. Yeah, I don't understand. Look, I mean,
he wants to stare some guy down. He's finally had one game in his career where he's outstanding and he's staring a guy down.
Yeah, you better get in there like you've been there before. That's so unlike him, too, you would think, right?
Yeah, I was really – at first, I mean, I watched it a couple times because I was like, what happened there? Did he, like, trip or was he just trying to make sure he avoided the guy properly or whatever? And then I was like, is he taunting that guy?
Yeah, I'm surprised there wasn't a flag there.
Certainly really not – certainly a questionable decision there.
Yeah, look, we saw Marcus Wheaton have a nice block out in space as well.
Really
he
good
did
block
it
on that screen to D'Angelo coming back across from the right to the left.
He really, really did do it all, and it's good to see. You know, it's not going to get – regardless, it's not going to get him a contract, but at least we know that you know, there's other weapons other than Martavis and Antonio Brown. Martavis. He's got to get better at A, high pointing the ball, B, when the ball is underthrown, he's got to make every effort to draw the flag by fighting through the defender to try to catch a ball that he's probably not going to catch in an effort to maybe draw a penalty, in my opinion.
Let me ask you a question because I had a different opinion of this, and some people on Twitter disagreed with me. I thought the first throw that Ben took the shot down the field to Martavis was it was a great throw, obviously. I thought the defender made the play on it, but there were others who said it went right through his hands. He wasn't catching it either way.
I'm going to have to go frame by frame. I haven't done that yet, David. Ask me on the next podcast, or I'll post something on Twitter.
And then,
we
talk about a game of inches. We talked about the great catch Jimmy Graham made. I'll tell you, Schneid made a great play on that home run ball to Bryant on the left side, right in the same place where Graham caught his, because Bryant came down with it, and Snead got in there as he's coming down and knocked it out. It was a really, really good defensive play, and I had a long chat on Twitter with somebody who was saying, that's such a dumb call on third and two and whatever. Well, if you watch the play, Ben goes through his progression to the right. It's Wheaton and A.B. on the right side, and A.B.'s on the outside, and he looks right first, and then he looks up the seam to Wheaton. So he has covered those two guys. Then he comes back to the left flat where he's got Jesse James running a flat route off the left side, and he's got D'Angelo coming out of the backfield on the left side. They're both covered. So he heaves it, and he underthrows the ball a bit, but that's because it's his third read, and, Bryant has blown by the guy. But Ben threw it, basically, I think, as far as he could, and he almost made a great play, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, you'd like to see a little bit stronger hands from Martavis. You'd like to see him high point that ball more consistently in the future. I mean, it wasn't an awful game, but he did have one big drop in that game, though, right?
Terrible drop for 25 yards. I think they came back and got the first down because I think that way he kind of jumped on a ball that didn't necessarily seem like he needed to jump. But yeah, on the left sideline there.
Let's see, what else we got? Heath Miller.
So how do you think Ben played?
He dropped it. Look, in that first half, he was on the money, wasn't he?
I thought he played well. Look, the interception, the one interception ball, he changes his mind. Okay, that was costly. And the one to Sherman, I'll just give a pass on that. I thought Ben played well. Some people didn't. Sometimes I'm on the other side of this equation. But, I I'm with you. I thought he was unbelievably good in the first half, and I thought he had a good game.
Yeah, I thought, and I talked about this with Alex on Friday. Sometimes I just think he takes too many unnecessary shots down the field.
Yep.
But that is who he is.
He didn't get any breaks on the deep balls. I mean, maybe the defenders could have broken up the touchdown pass to Wheaton. That was a little underthrown. But as you point out, Bryant could have made – it would have been tough catches. But, it's three balls down the field for another 100 yards worth of receiving yards that he didn't catch. I don't think AB dropped any. Wheaton didn't. The throw on the sideline to Wheaton was a great throw and almost a great catch. I think the refs made the right call to not call it a catch. Very close.
Yeah, I do too. And like you said, if you add back in that drop by Bryant, the one that you just described to Wheaton, maybe one more drop in there as well too. We're talking about a guy that threw for 500 yards. Well, newsflash, guys just don't throw for 500 yards every week in the NFL. So there's something to be said somewhere in that. And look, the Seahawks, they do use a lot of pattern reading. And the thing is, what's the difference between the Steelers' success on offense versus the Seahawks' success on offense? I think the key difference is how many of the explosive plays that the Steelers get are a result of Ben Roethlisberger extending the play. How many explosive plays do the Seahawks have where the ball's out?
Bang, bang. Bang, bang, up the seam for 30.
I mean, am I right?
Absolutely. I mean, the Steelers got some of those, but, Ben had to buy time. I thought the offensive line did a pretty good job, so let's give them some props. We haven't talked about offensive line play much in the past couple of weeks. So they did their job. I'll give them that. D'Angelo Williams with the ball in his hands did a great job as a receiver. The Steelers came out with a game plan to attack offensively. Look, they turned it over four times. I'm not going to worry too much about the two Landry Jones turnovers in the scheme of the game. They made a decision that they get, that turnover, unfortunately, what it cost them the first one was 60 yards of field position. So that was significant. I had a lot of people, complaining about momentum and things like that, as if the Seahawks were never going to get anything going at any point in the game. It's the first play of the second quarter. Momentum's, you're not putting them away with a field goal there at 6-0. Take you back to the Browns game in Cleveland last year. Steelers had the exact same situation. They botched the field goal. And the Browns went up 31-10. You gotta get some touchdowns. So whether you like the call or don't, I don't think momentum was the driver there. But you know, Dave, did you think anybody? You know, we didn't mention any of the guys in the front seven. I thought Cam Hayward played a good game. The Steelers did a good job of keeping Russell Wilson in the pocket. I think he only had one designed run. That was late in the game where he got 10 yards. But I thought they did a really good job, particularly Cam Hayward, in containing him.
Yeah, I thought so in containment. I thought Timmons did a good job on making Wilson throw one away. What did you think about the call to push out of bounds? Is that unnecessary roughness?
A couple calls that I thought were bad. That was a bad call. Shamarco's an idiot, but I think it was still a questionable call.
Second time Shamarco's done that this year.
We killed him the first time he did it because the first time was terrible. I thought this was much less egregious, but you know he's got to be more aware. He can't put a guy in a position to make that call. The Timmons call I thought was bad. There was another call. We saw Mike Carey kind of the whole thing. Jim Nantz. I kind of chuckled at Jim Nantz, kind of just saying this is all ridiculous. Nobody knows what's going on, and he's right. You know, officiating in this league is terrible. Nobody knows the rules.
Mike Carey's about to become a verb at some point. You know, look, 19 putos, as I like to call them, right?
Yeah.
19 points off of turnovers. You can't turn the football over four times in a game and not get any. And that's the difference. The Steelers didn't get any turnovers, right? I mean, had they gotten a turnover or two in the game, you know, are we talking a little bit?
Well, if that ball stays in bounds and Cocker recovers it, maybe, yeah.
What were they in the red zone? Steelers 2 of 4 in the red zone. Seahawks 4 for 4, 100%. Third down, Steelers just atrocious defensively on that. While the Steelers offense did fine, 5 of 11 for 45%. Seahawks 7 of 13.
And how many of those? How many? There was that one drive where 3 straight pass plays were over 10 yards. I mean, they had 3rd and 10 or more, and converted 3 in a row.
Yeah, I would have liked to see Tuitt. I expected Tuitt to dominate a little bit more in that game. I think
only time I saw was that near clothesline, as you called it. Good play, knocking down Russell Wilson. I think he made one other kind of ankle tackle. I saw. I didn't see much from him.
Yeah, Mike Mitchell missed a couple tackles in this game. We already talked about Blake. Will Allen, not a good game. I thought Spence played okay. We'll see. I'll have to go back and look at the tape a little bit more in depth, see how he played. Shazier really, I don't think, was a factor during the short time he was in there. Steve McClendon barely played some snaps in there, so I think that about covers it there. Marcus Gilbert, I thought, on the offensive side of the ball, had another good game at right tackle.
Yeah, Heath, we didn't mention coming out just targeting Heath down the middle of the field. And good look. You and Dave, we have hit on this so many freaking times, and I said it so many times with the backup quarterbacks, that those guys don't have the confidence or the experience to use the middle of the field, and it's killing the Steelers because the guys can take away the outside stuff. And you saw Ben try to make sure that he just exploited the middle of the field with Heath and Wheaton. We've hit on this so many times this year that this stuff has been there. If they're going to give it to you, take it. And he just kept taking it. And then he'd take his shots deep, mostly to Martavis, but occasionally to AB. But I think it shows that if you want to play them like Cleveland and not double the outsides, we're going to kill you with our outside guys. And
all right,
if you want to do that, then we'll kill you down the middle of the field. And that's what the Steelers' offense has to be.
Yeah, and they got to play better defense too. They can't get into these 40-40 games or whatnot, you know. In my opinion, real quick, Steelers, we've got to wrap this up. Steelers make the playoffs.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. But I'm not expecting them to go far, like I said. We'll see. We got a stretch of 5 games. We'll talk about Mike Tomlin, what he has to say on Tuesday. On Wednesday's show, we'll talk a little bit more about this game. Get a beat writer in on Wednesday as well too. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. A couple more donations came in. Steven Mendoza this morning. Steven, thanks for the donation. We'll read off a few more of these when we get to Wednesday as well, too. David, have a great Monday, And I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
And thanks again to Alex for filling in Monday and Friday last week. Hope everybody had a great holiday. I'm sorry that Sunday put a bit of a damper on our holiday weekend. But as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.